of Nigerian women and Ghanaian women and the way that they dress, it is fashion that is second to none in the world. I'll put them up against anybody. They are absolutely gorgeous.
Wow.
Gorgeous. Yes. Wow.
That's incredible. So again.
So it made me feel great. It was transformational. I know my full identity now. It's transformational. And I just have to tell you this. One of the big revelatory moments is when we were in Lagos and my doctor, he took us to the Lagos Country Club to get suya. Now, suya is like my favorite thing. It's like little strips of beef, or they can use other meats, but they have this dry rub they call suya spice, and they roast it over fire. Oh, my goodness. It's so good. It is so good that it is said that one rich Nigerian who was in London used to have somebody fly to Nigeria to get suya and fly it back to England.
Wow.
That's how good suya is. This is like the richest man in Africa, Dangote. They said his uncle would do this when he was in England. He would miss suya and he would have somebody fly over and get suya and bread. At least that's what I've heard. I'm sure Dangote could tell you exactly, but that's what I've heard. But I can just tell you, anybody that's listening to this that knows about it will tell you suya is delicious. It's like my favorite Nigerian food. But anyway, they took us to the country club to get some suya, which was also the best suya that I had up to that point. And when we rounded the corner, I had to tell everybody to stop. I said, wait a minute, hold up. We have to stop right here. Because as far as I could see, and I looked all around, there was nothing but people of African descent, melanated people in a country club, okay? And I told everyone with me, I said, there was about 10 of us in that group. I said, I want you all to take note of this. I said, you will not see this sight in America that I know of. I've never been in a country club. Usually the people in the country club, you know, you might have one or two melanated people, but most of the melanated people are on the grounds, keeping the grounds, or you know, in the kitchen, and serving, which is nothing wrong with that. But I'm just saying, because of the way that, you know, America is, that's what you normally see. And when we were in a country club, which the facility wasn't much to speak of because it had been there since the days of colonialism. But the fact that I'm at a country club with everybody in the pool, everybody around here, you know, everybody at the little the bar, the club, everybody looked like me. It was, I tell you, it was amazing.
That's what I was going to get to, because you got to, at least from my vantage point now, I'm just going to be totally transparent here. I have not been outside of the country. I've always had a love, though, for wanting to, at one point, try and, you know, get myself up to go to, you know, Africa, specifically Ghana. But The shock value that we would have here in the States from witnessing something like that, I mean, it had to be one of those moments where you say to yourself, wait a minute, what's going on here?
It's a game changer. It's a game changer. It's like, wow. You know, I talked to some of my African friends, and, you know, they grow up with this all the time. For example, I will always carry the Nigerian Naira or the Ghanaian Cedi, that's their money, with me. And when I'm in America, and I will show it to people, like when I check in at a hotel or if I'm at a store or something like that, I say, have you ever seen Nigerian money? You know, I'll ask the melanated cashier or the person that's working at the hotel, and they'll be like, no. And then I show them, and they say, oh, there's black people on the money, okay? And so we have never seen that. So when I tell my Nigerian and Ghanaian friends, they're like, oh, yes, of course. I'm like, hey, but I said, we have grown up in a country where our parents had to tell us when we were, as soon as we could understand, my mother told us, you are black and you're beautiful, but in this country, you have two strikes against you. There are people that are not going to like you just because of your color. They're not even going to get to know you. They just because of your color, they're not going to like you. And you have to be twice as good to be considered equal.
Yes.
This is what all wise African-American parents tell their children when we are just little children. And when I tell my African friends this, they're like, wow. I'm like, that's the difference in the environment that we grow up in and that they grow up in. So let me tell you something about Yoruba culture. When the Yoruba have a baby, they have a naming ceremony. And in the naming ceremony, families from around the village come to the naming ceremony. They offer something to the family as a gift, you know, kind of to help financially, Or if it's an agrarian, they might offer some of what they grow on their farm or whatever. But they will also suggest a name for the child, okay? Now, the parents will pick a name for the child, but every family that picked a name, the name that they picked, that child will be known by that name, by that family, for the rest of their life. So let me just give you an example. Let's say the parents decided to name their daughter Ceci, right? And then one of the family said, oh, we think Wami is such a beautiful name. We suggest Wami. And another one said, oh, we suggest Oyin. It's such a beautiful name. So when the child gets older, as she's walking around the village, you know, somebody will come up to her and say, Wami, oh, such a vision, such a lovely child. How are you today? And then she'll walk a little further and someone will say, Oyin, oh, my dear, you are so lovely. How are you? And then after a while, little Ceci's going to say to her, Mom, well, my name is Ceci. Why are they calling me Wami and Oyin? And then they'll learn, oh, my child, when you were born, they were at the naming ceremony, and they suggested this name for you. And to them, you will be called that name all your life. So one of my friends who is Yoruba, she was the first female rear admiral in the continent of Africa, as well as, of course, Nigeria. She's Nigerian. So she was the first female rear admiral in Nigeria, but all of the continent of Africa. So she has 26 names and she knows all of them. Yeah. Now imagine how nurturing that is. Because one of the things I've learned about Nigerians and Ghanaians is that they have this attitude of they can do anything. Nobody's better than them. They don't. And some people have said it's arrogance, and I'm not saying that there might not be some who are arrogant. It depends on the situation. But I know that a lot of times they're just really confident, and sometimes people can mistake confidence for arrogance. They are extremely confident, and if you grow up in that kind of environment, then they're not growing up when they're 5 or 6 years old having their parents telling them they got 2 strikes against it, they got to work twice as hard. I had my first incident of racism when I was 6 years old, you know, in America. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad my mother told me because, man, they didn't wait long. It was my music teacher that did it. Music teacher, right? In first grade. So this is what is so significant.
Wow, brother, that you just don't know what that did to me internally, just listening to that story about the naming ceremony itself, the sense of community.
Yes.
The parents. Powerful. Right? The parents, mm-hmm. You know, giving, I guess, in a sense, alms or, you know, being charitable to the family to help them. Exactly. With whatever expenses.
It's like they're economically helping the family.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, that's powerful. That is very powerful.
It is. And that's a part of their culture.
And again, that's something that I think at one point, because I'm a little older, but at one point we had a sense of that. But now when you look, I really don't want to go off on that tangent. But now when you look at us.
But even that is interesting. Missing. We don't have to go off on the tangent, but even that's interesting because over the seas and over the hundreds of years, that was a part of African American community at one time. You're right. That was before desegregation. Yes, it was a part of our community because my mother told me it was like that. She said if dad does something wrong, the neighbor would get you.
Yes, sir.
You know, now you do that, people be trying to sue you. But mom said the neighbor would get you and then they would tell your parents.
And they would get
you. Parents would get
and they would get you. That's correct. That's right. We did have it, but we're so far removed
that
from that now.
That is African culture.
I'm glad you said that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, powerful. So let me ask you then. It seems like there was already a sense of foundation with you, you know, as a young man. Or am I correct in assuming that? And if that is the case, what was the transition period? I mean, because again, if you're in the States and you've never experienced anything like that whatsoever, and all of a sudden you go into another country where the norms and the traditions and everything and culture is different, right? There's going to be a bit of a sense where it's not going to either feel comfortable for you, or because you don't have somewhat of a foundation for it, or you know you just mm-hmm. might it just might repel you altogether. So I'm just trying to figure out whether or not if you already had somewhat of a foundation going into this, and what was the transition mm-hmm. period?
Another great question. this is the way God did it for me. When my doctor would come back, as I said, he would start inviting me to the Independence Day celebration. So, and that was only like once a year, you know, in October, but he would invite me. So I would go and I would see Nigerian clothing, Nigerian fashion, the delicious food. And then, of course, when he saw how much I liked it, every now and then they would invite us over to their house to be able to enjoy some, you know, the moi moi, which is they basically take black-eyed peas and remove the shells, and then they mold it, and they put nice flavor in it, and they mold it in this little packet of like aluminum foil. And it, when it comes out, it's like molded. I don't know. It's kind of like if you had mashed potatoes that were stiff, but it's the black-eyed peas, but it's got flavors and things in it. It's just delicious. And egusi soup, pounded yam, and just the different things. Just different foods. And so that kind of eased the transition. And then when I went to Nigeria and they told me I was Nigerian, actually I was overjoyed and ecstatic, because to see that this culture that I had been exposed to, that God exposed me to over years, because from the time I started going, 2005 to the time 2013, it was 8 years that I had been going to these Independence Day celebrations. And then I found out in the 8th year that I am Nigerian, you know, and then when I did my DNA, I'm Ghanaian. So I was overjoyed. I was ecstatic. I was really so happy. I was like, I am Nigerian. And so Nigerians were very surprised, because, you know, the U.S., this is something that I really want us to understand. The U.S. media tries to make us think that everything Nigerian is a scammer. Every Nigerian is a scammer. Well, the reason I believe that they do that is because they realized what I found out, because after I learned that I was Nigerian, I legally changed my name. I began to do some keynote speaking in some of the functions. And so you have to do research to find out about the people that you're talking to. And this is what I found out. Nigerians and other Africans are the most educated people group percentage-wise about when you measure how the percentage of that group that has degrees. Most educated in America of every group that you can name, okay? America would have us think that the Asians are the ones that have the highest percentage of degrees. Mm. And that's not true. It's actually the Africans, led by the Nigerians with the highest percentage, and then the other Africans, and then the Asians are behind the Africans, okay? So this was shocking, because they know this, but they don't want us to know it, because then you'll have to admit that you didn't do our ancestors a favor when you enslaved them. And if we look at that and we look at compare it to African Americans, and no disparagement to us African Americans, it just shows you the difference that an environment that's nurturing and one that's racist can have on a people.
Yes.
It's a great study. If you just look at you can look at statistics like that, and you can directly relate those, because we have the same DNA. We have the same DNA. So you can directly relate those things to environment. And the reason why African Americans have not achieved, we've done many great things. We have a rich culture. And so I don't want people to get the wrong idea. And I'm not saying that we're not a great people. We are. But we have been a great people that's been in an environment where we had to tell our children when they were 6 years old that you got to, you know, be twice as good to be considered equal. You got two strikes against you. You know, that's kind of a little traumatic for a child to figure that. And then at 6 years old, I'm getting my first taste of prejudice and racism, right? Where the teacher sees all the kids running in and then he trips me. He literally sticks out his foot and trips me. So, you know, this is the difference in the environment. So I learned that the Nigerians are the most educated group in America, followed by other Africans. They have the highest earning, yes, and this includes Caucasian Americans. They get bachelor's degrees at a rate of more than 2 to 1 compared to Caucasian Americans, and they get advanced degrees at a rate of more than 3 to 1. Compared to Caucasian Americans. And they are the highest earning of any group. So literally, they are the most successful group that has ever set foot on American soil is the Africans. And they don't want us to know that.